You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where sometimes we're a day late, but we're always short. At least I am. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, and I'm recording this episode on a Tuesday morning. It is the Tuesday of spring break here in Florida, in my county where I teach. This past weekend was Christine's birthday, so it being the beginning of spring break, it being her birthday, we went down to Naples for a few days. That also necessitates that I record a solo episode because William is, of course, hard at work because he has a normal job where they don't give you random weeks throughout the year off, and then everyone still complains that they work too hard. And I, as a teacher, I have to say, I think they are professionals at one thing. And I don't know if this is putting my job at risk saying this on a podcast that I'm recording, but from what I've seen, and it's not all of them, again, right, whenever you're generalizing, doesn't apply to everyone. There are some really great people who work at the school, and I want to be clear about that. Some really great people. But on average, I think what teachers are professionals at is complaining. Complaining and, like any good bureaucrat, make it seem like the things they do are incredibly complicated and impossible for anyone else to do. And I'm not saying teaching is not a skill. Obviously, it's a skill. I'm not saying it's not difficult. It's not challenging. All of those things are true. But all of those things are true of many professions. But since I've been at this school, teachers have complained over and over again. Anytime there's a meeting with a bunch of teachers, it's not about accomplishing whatever needs to be accomplished in the meeting. It's about complaining. The meeting becomes about complaining. And how can you complain? How can you complain? I got a pretty good life, right? So the worst thing that's happened to me recently is I have to record this episode a little bit late. And knowing that I'm not fulfilling my pre-planned schedule. But the schedule, who set it up? I set it up. So it's sort of like working out, right? Like nobody else is telling me I have to work out 5 days a week. And who am I disappointing if I don't work out 5 days a week? Myself. But, you know, when I first started really getting serious with lifting, the person I hired to write my workouts for me said something very important and something we should remember. And it's something I'm telling myself right now, so I don't feel bad about bringing you this episode on a Tuesday morning rather than, or you might even hear this on a Tuesday afternoon, rather than a Monday per usual. Monday at midnight is when it usually comes out. Although I'm always interested, since I've moved from East to West Coast, does it come out still on West Coast time, or does it come out on East Coast time? I don't know. Somebody let me know about that, because I'm asleep at that point. So I guess it doesn't really matter, because most people are asleep, unless you're our foreign audience. So maybe it affects the foreign audience more. I don't know how much of a foreign audience we have. But so, as I was saying, the trainer told me, you never want to let working out get in the way of life. And I think that's a good way of looking at everything. Life is an integrated whole, and you don't want to let everything get in the way of life. Now, everything is life, so what do I mean by that? I mean that it all fits together. I said the term, integrated whole. So you never want to let one thing take over to the point that it's taking away from other values. So, this being the first week of spring break, and it also being Christine's birthday recently, over the weekend, I didn't want to let the podcast overtake those values, overtake the value of spending time with my fiance, overtake the value of having a mini vacation. And we even, you know, we went down to Naples because that's where my cousin lives, spending time with my cousin and, you know, the other members of his immediate family. Didn't want to let the podcast overtake that. And it's not that, you know, I'm shirking on the podcast. I'm just shifting around the recording schedule a little bit. It's the same thing with working out. Maybe you want to do Monday through Friday, but you can't because of any number of reasons. And that's something I've really had to come to terms with, you know, coaching especially during the wrestling season. It's a little easier during cross country because cross country, they would run for like an hour and then you'd still have plenty of time to get to the gym. I'd still have plenty of time to get to the gym, but as far as wrestling, like that would go, you know, JV practice, then varsity, get done at 5:30, 6 o'clock. So if I really wanted to work out, I wouldn't get home till like 8 p.m. But that's something I will think about going forward into next year as I'm planning things. But the point is, of all this long blah, 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 everyone caring about my schedule, is that's why I'm bringing this to you a little bit late. That's why I'm bringing it to you a little bit late. I made an executive decision because I am the executive for this podcast, and now I'm bringing you this episode. Actually, it worked out sort of in a good way, because it gave me something I really wanted to talk about, and it actually makes two topics super interrelated. I've been off of social media. I'm on Instagram, but Instagram's a lot easier to control what you see if you don't go in the Explore feed, the little magnifying glass at the bottom. And also, I don't follow a lot of people on there, and I don't interact as much, so there's not a lot in my actual feed. And I look at stories more on Instagram than I do the actual feed. I wonder if it's like that for most people. But anyway, I've been off of social media, the internet, really Twitter, for almost 2 weeks now. And the reason I've done this is I don't want to be spoiled at all for Zack Snyder's Justice League. Now, that probably sounds ridiculous to you. Because don't I know most of the things that are going to happen? Yeah, I know most of the things that are going to happen, most likely. I think I know how it's going to end. I think I know how it's going to get there. I know a lot of the beats. But of course, in storytelling, it's not the what, it's the how. So with Zack Snyder here, it's always going to matter the ideas. How is he telling the story? How is the execution? How do the ideas behind it influence what he is showing? How do the ideas Zack Snyder is dealing with in the movie influence what he is showing in the movie? That's what's going to matter the most. And that's what I don't want to be spoiled about. I don't want to be spoiled about the how. And the way that is done is through people's perceptions. Now, if you've been on this journey with me for a very long time, you remember the huge issue that started all of this for me. The huge issue was Man of Steel, specifically people's reactions to it. And I would see Man of Steel and I would just be like, this is a fucking amazing movie, right? All of his movies are amazing, but this was a particular experience I had with Man of Steel. I didn't understand the cultural minefield I was about to walk into over the next, what has this been? Man of Steel was 2013. We're in 2011. We're in 2011. Yeah, we went backwards in time, everyone. Superman flew backwards around the Earth. We went backwards in time. No, this is 2021. My bad. So that's 8 years. We're almost 8 years now because it was June 2013. So I didn't understand the cultural minefield, the cultural quagmire, whatever you want to call it, that I would be walking into over the next 8 years. I saw the movie and I loved it and I was like, this is amazing. And then I would go online and I would see the conversation around it. And I was like, people are acting like this is the worst fucking movie they've ever seen. People are acting like this is fucking Darkness starring Anna Paquin. Right, this is book smart. That's what people are acting like here. Right? So then I would go back and I would see the movie again. I was like, this movie is fucking tremendous. It's tremendous. It's a Zack Snyder movie. It's fucking great. It has explanations for everything. It all makes sense. It's well-paced. It's got important ideas in it. It's got a good theme. This is a great movie. Then I would see the opinions again. I would see the reviews. I would see the perspectives. I would see the conversation. It's like they were watching a different movie. Now, this whole idea of the two different movies, this is literally Scott Adams' metaphor, right? And this is why for a little bit, before Scott Adams went Trump derangement syndrome in the positive side, right? Too many people use Trump derangement syndrome just to mean negative, right? Oh, all this hatred towards him. There's a lot of Trump derangement syndrome for the positive side as well. A lot of people who saw him as like, Xerxes almost as a god king, right? It's the same thing. Scott Adams went in that direction. He went in that direction, but he was appealing because he had this idea that people are watching two different movies. And they really are. You know, that's a lot of what the mid-side's about, right? There's a couple different sides, but that's not, your two movies aren't correct. In this case, I was on one of those two sides. I still think it's the middle because I still think that a lot of people on one side see Superman as a Christ metaphor. I don't think he's supposed to be that way. I think he's undermining it. As a response to it. But regardless, it was very much that metaphor that Scott Adams has, right? The literally watching two different movies. So it was the first time I really noticed, like, there are people who see things in such a different way. You know, I obviously, as a communicator, as a professional communicator, as an intelligent human being, I believe I'm intelligent. I'd like to. Maybe I'm a fucking idiot. Maybe I'm the one who saw Man of Steel in a fucking retarded way. And I watched this movie and I read shit into it. Maybe I'm the nuts one, right? That's something we all sort of have to live with. I wake up every day and I just go about my day as if I'm normal and healthy. But maybe I'm fucking crazy. My belief, though, is if I'm crazy, reality will punch me in the face eventually. And I know that because in my past, when I was unhealthy, reality did punch me in the face. So, again, I, you know, allowing for the fact that I could be the nuts one, right? I acknowledge that, you know, other perspectives exist. And that's the value, right? It's the whole House thing, right? You watch House, and the reason he has a whole team of people is all their different perspectives are valuable, right? They give him different pieces of evidence and different angles to look at whatever disease he is diagnosing from. And to me, that's the wonderful thing about dialectical. That's the wonderful thing about conversation, is you can talk to a bunch of different people and they can share different perspectives. So not only do I know that people have different perspectives and see the world differently, I love it. I think it's one of the best things about life. It's what makes life worth living. A lot of people, you know, it's like, the different experiences, going to the different places, different countries, eating different food, like that's the variety they love. And don't get me wrong, that's great. That's great. But to me, there's only like a certain amount of variety in there. And it's like, okay, then we're just using different sauces, or we're just seeing the different ways people constructed buildings. And it goes back to the variety I love. And that's the variety of like, who are all these different people, right? And what are they thinking and what are they valuing? What are they valuing? That's what I love, the variety of values, right? I love the variety of values. But accepting that premise, right? Accepting there are people with a variety of values and those values lead to different perspectives and different assessments of reality. The key word I just used there is reality. And what I never really saw, I guess, before Man of Steel, and I think I did, I just wasn't aware of it as explicitly and concretely, is how disconnected some people are from reality and how their perspective is so, I'm just going to say, it's so insane. It's so insane. And I think we've seen that grow over the past 8 years, over the past decade. You know, I don't think Man of Steel was certainly the beginning of it. I think maybe it was the first time I was aware that it was sort of a mass phenomenon. I mean, look, I've said this before on the show. I went to Ithaca College, right? I was there, you know, 2001 to 2005. All this social justice stuff. I mean, I was there. They had an anti-hate rally when I was at school there because somebody wrote a racist slur in the elevator. So you got a bunch of drunk college kids and somebody wrote a racist slur on a predominantly white campus and you're going to hold an anti-hate rally. Not defending the racist slur, obviously, but like fucking stupid drunk college kids are going to do stupid drunk things. Right. Likewise, they put up the gay pride flag and somebody stole it and they tried to blame the college Republicans, as if college Republicans have the fucking time to steal a flag. Right. And if, again, one person does it, does that mean all the Republicans did it? So all of this stuff, you know, that's going on now, I saw then. But it used to be, they used to say, you know, Ithaca, 5 square miles surrounded by reality. That was literally what they said about the town. Right. And it was even the people who believed in that stuff and lived there, that was sort of a saying they embraced. So there's almost a sort of self-awareness of it. But in the time since then, And, you know, I would say even the past 8 years, I don't know if we want to solely blame it on Trump derangement syndrome or link it that explicitly to Trump, but definitely the past 10 years, maybe the past 20, maybe we can say the 2000s. I don't know. Maybe it's been my entire adult life since I've graduated high school to now. Maybe it's just been slowly getting worse, but it was the first time, you know, Man of Steel was the first time I was like, holy shit, there are people very, very, very disconnected from reality. It's not just seeing the world differently. It's not just having different perspectives. It's just like, holy shit. Wow. And that's what I'm trying to avoid. That's what I'm trying to avoid in regards to Zack Snyder's Justice League. That's what I'm trying to avoid. Now, the word that is very unclear, right? You're like, Justin, I'm still not sure what you're saying. What the fuck are you talking about? What the fuck are you talking about? Well, I'm going to give you another example, and then I'm going to wrap it back into Zack Snyder's Justice League to show you what I mean, to tell you what I mean. I don't know. Podcasts are interesting, right? Because good communication is showing and not telling, but here I am just talking to you. Am I telling the whole time, or am I showing? Something to think about. So this is why I was kind of fortunate that it worked out to be recording this on a Tuesday rather than normally on a Sunday. Monday marked the beginning of the legal tampering period for NFL free agency. What that means is I believe free agency technically starts on the 17th. I believe. But the legal tampering period is when you can start, the teams can start talking to players and coming to agreements with them. They can't sign contracts before the 50 or before the 17th, but the teams can start talking to them and coming to a verbal agreement on the 15th. Now, a couple logistical things here. Why not just make free agency start on the 15th? I don't know. Maybe it's for the second reason I'm about to say. Some of these leaked deals in the tampering period happen so quickly after the tampering period starts that clearly these teams are communicating with the free agents before the tampering period. So maybe the whole point of it is just to sort of, you know, human nature, you know, that people aren't really following these rules fast and hard. So if you create a lag here, you say free agency starts on Wednesday, the tampering period starts on Monday, you know that the week before, the 2 weeks before, they'll start talking. And if you push it back, free agency to Monday, maybe the 2 weeks before, 3 weeks before, they'll start talking. It's got to be something to do with that. I would think that that's the reality of it. Or maybe it's this whole idea, you know, that we pretend to have rules to make it seem fair. I mean, I get that you want some uniformity with things, and like on the field, the uniformity of rules is super important. But off the field, if I sign a contract with you and my contract is up, you know, we sign it on April 23rd, right? And we sign a year contract. Well, why don't we just make my contract up on April 23rd the next year? I guess the idea of a league is saying that that's not fair because then every team would have to know when every contract in the league ended and know when everyone's a free agent. But isn't that the way it works in the world? Isn't that the way it works? Like, there's not one, like, let's just say Silicon Valley League, where every employee of Silicon Valley has to be on the same schedule of contracts, right? They're up every year, and then everyone knows, oh, everyone's a free agent at this point, or they're re-signing at this point. So why do we do it for sports? I guess we do it for sports to try and make it more competitive, right? Because imagine somebody signed in, like, October, and then their contract was up the next October, and then they jumped to a contender and made that contender better. But again, isn't that part of the free market? Isn't that part of reality? So aren't the rules arguably set up in an anti-reality way? Oh, again, something to think about. Something to think about there. Something to reflect on. Anyway, so the legal tampering period started. And this year is a unique year for the Patriots for a couple reasons, right? Tom Brady's gone forever. Tier. Also, he wasn't the only one that was affecting the salary cap. He wasn't the only one that was affecting the salary cap. A lot of players were affecting the salary cap last year. Because of that, the Patriots had a lot of dead money, and the roster was terrible last year. The roster was terrible last year because they were paying out a lot of money to people who were no longer on the team. Tom Brady, Antonio Brown, others. This year, all that money comes off the books. All that money comes off the books. So the Patriots have the third highest amount of salary cap space. And there are teams that are over the salary cap. Why are they over the salary cap? Because the league had to lower its salary cap due to decreased revenue due to COVID. So that makes this a unique year. The Patriots have a lot more money to spend than they usually do. And the rest of the league doesn't have as much money to spend. What does that do? Well, that positions the Patriots as able to get most free agents they want and get them at a good price because it gives them all the leveraging power. Oh, you get to come play for Bill Belichick for a historically great franchise, and we're going to be able to give you a better contract than anyone else can give you. So this is the way it's going to work for us. It gives the Patriots bargaining power more than most other teams in the league right now, because the difference between the other couple teams at the top isn't really that much. And, you know, they're not the Patriots. So the other two teams, I don't remember who they are. I think one might be the Jets. And if you're going to choose between the Patriots and the Jets, come on. Who are you going to choose? You're going to go to the Jets? Really, the Jets? Come on. So, you know, it gives the Patriots all the bargaining power. And now here's where everything wraps back around. Ready? Here's where everything wraps back around. Bill Belichick has signed a bunch of players. Signed a linebacker. Signed a couple nose tackles. Signed a cornerback. Signed a tight end. Signed a couple wide receivers. Basically, turning over the whole team. Right? Because we are getting some COVID opt-outs back, right? Hightower opted out, Chung opted out, right? We're getting some people back. But with us not really having a quarterback, and no, I'm not counting Cam Newton. I know they signed him for a low-term deal, short amount of money, 1 year again. Cam Newton has to be a stopgap measure. Look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm smarter than Bill Belichick and I know what he's thinking. But no one can look at Cam Newton, who has any sense of anything about football, and be like, oh, yeah, they're going to win with him. Oh, yeah, he's the quarterback of the future. No, he has to be a stopgap measure, which means the team has to get younger and the team has to be built around defense so that when they have a new quarterback, a new young quarterback, they can grow the team around him. And also, This gives the Patriots more bargaining power here, salary-wise. If you know you're going to go with a young quarterback, that gives you 4 to 5 years of his salary not counting against the cap. Now, it's not that he doesn't have any salary, but, you know, compare giving $20, $30 million a year to a Brady, a Breeze, or a Rodgers, or a Mahomes, versus $5 million a year to a first-round pick, right? Trevor Lawrence, how much is he going to get a year? Let's say he's going to get $5 million. 5 versus 20, 5 versus 30, that's 2 to 3 other players that can make a huge difference. That's 2 to 3 other players. You know, say you have Lawrence, and then you can get a Gronk, and you can get a running back. That's a three-headed monster right there. In 5 years, if you do well enough, you can get to the Super Bowl a couple times and win one or two. So it makes a phenomenal difference if you know you're going to be on a rookie quarterback. If you're going to with a rookie quarterback on the rookie quarterback deal, and that's what's counting against the cap. I mean, that's what happened to the Seahawks back in the day, right? They got to a couple Super Bowls and won one because they had such a good defense they were able to pay because Russell Wilson was on his rookie deal. And then the Chiefs, we'll see what happens with them. They got to a couple and they won one. You know, they got to the AFC Championship game 3 times. They got to the Super Bowl twice. They won one. By the way, I love the diminishing returns there because it shows you how difficult it is to win those games. Right? And now Mahomes is getting paid all that money. And we saw in the Super Bowl they had offensive line trouble. They did just sign Joe Tooney from the Patriots. So we'll see, you know, if they can get their offensive line going. But the point is, now they're going to have to deal with the salary cap crunch. The salary crap. It's the salary cap crap. The salary crap, right? And that's the whole thing we were, you know, I was talking about before with the free market. Baseball doesn't have a salary cap. The NBA has a luxury tax. Could you argue the salary cap as a as an institution, as a concept, is anti-free market as well, anti-reality? Again, something to think about. But the point is, the Patriots have all the leveraging power. Now we're going to wrap this back around. When you go on the internet, everyone is acting like Bill Belichick went crazy. Right? Even Christine on Instagram is sending me memes about Bill Belichick. You know, the Complex Sports account. The Complex account sent memes about Bill Belichick. Oh, well, Bill Belichick saw Tom Brady win without him, so now he's trying to sign as many players as possible. Oh, Bill Belichick went nuts. He's changing his philosophy now that he doesn't have Tom Brady anymore. It is so obvious that that perspective is anti-reality. It's so disconnected from reality. But that's what we have now. When we have social media, when we have the internet, it propagates, it builds, it pushes, and I don't mean like it's a sentient, self-aware thing, but the way the conversation works on it, it pushes these surface-level takes. Yeah, if you look at the surface level, yeah, the Patriots signed a shitload of people. They did. They signed a lot of people. They gave them a lot of money. Right. And if you compare it to the past, then it looks like things are different here. But people go to the most surface level, dare I say, emotional reaction. People are projecting onto Bill Belichick that he's going to act emotionally, because if they were in his situation and they saw Tom Brady go and win, they would be emotional about it. They would be emotional about it. And I mean that in the sense of like a negative emotion. They would be jealous, or they would be angry, or it would make them hate themselves. Whereas I would say that Bill Belichick probably had a similar reaction to what I had. Yeah, good for you, Tom. Good for you. You know, I know that for the past 20 years I helped you win. I wouldn't be who I am and you wouldn't be who you are without each other. And so it's good to see you go and win somewhere else. It doesn't impact me. That doesn't affect me at all. I have to deal with this situation. I have the Patriots cap. I have the Patriots roster. I have the Patriots schedule. That doesn't affect the Buccaneers. That only affects the Buccaneers and is only affected by the Buccaneers if we play you in the Super Bowl. Or Tampa Bay's going to New England in a regular season game in the fall. It affects Belichick then. But otherwise, why would anyone rational or healthy have any sort of negative emotions about that? And why would Belichick make his decisions to win or not based on Tom Brady winning in Tampa Bay? Why? Why would he? Like, he suddenly doesn't want to win anymore? Like, he suddenly doesn't have all the fucking rings he has? Right? Like, it gives him more of a desire to win rings because Tom Brady won one ring without him? Hey, remember when Bill Belichick won as defensive coordinator for the Giants in the 90s and those rings he got without Brady? Belichick remembers a time without Brady. Brady may not remember a time without Belichick. But the point is, that's what you have here on Instagram. That's what you have here on Twitter. That's what you have. Even it was on Reddit, right? Reddit, like, if you want to see Reddit sports conversation, holy shit, Reddit loves defending Cam Newton. Oh, well, Bill Belichick is signing these wide receivers and the tight ends because he's admitting to Cam Newton. Cam Newton sucking was Bill Belichick's fault. Belichick's admitting that by signing Jonnu Smith and signing the wide receivers. Bill Belichick's admitting that the reason Cam Newton's shoulder doesn't work is because he didn't have any tight ends and good enough wide receivers last year. That's what he's admitting, that Cam Newton's shoulder didn't work. And that's what's interesting to me here. And I'm going to wrap it back to Zack Snyder's Justice League in a second. What's interesting to me here is, I want to know how much of these anti-reality, these disconnected takes, existed before the internet. And what I mean by that is, were the newspapers full of this? Were talk radio full of this? Were TVs full of this and we just didn't know? Or is giving a voice to all of the non-experts really that damaging? And what I mean more specifically is as follows. Before we had a vetting process, we had a vetting process where the gatekeepers, and yes, I am making an argument here for possibly the value of gatekeepers. The gatekeepers made sure only healthy and rational people got to the top. Now, yes, I know the inverse of this is, well, they can make sure only the people who support their point of view got to the top. I understand that. And again, as the mid-side, I'm not saying I'm all pro-gatekeepers or anti-internet, but I'm talking about what we have as a problem here with the internet right now. What they kept all, you know, they made all sure all the experts get up there, right? They made sure all the opinions are connected to reality. Whereas now, the internet is a fucking free-for-all. Now, perhaps the problem with the internet is it isn't a free-for-all, and these tech companies are only cultivating certain points of view. You could argue that. You could argue their use of algorithms and ways of getting us mentally addicted to participate more is creating the problem. And maybe I'm not an expert enough. I've only seen a couple documentaries on Netflix and HBO Max. Maybe I'm not educated enough to say that, but I am educated enough to talk about the outcome. The outcome here is these disconnected perspectives, right? Where I could see back in the day, the fucking drunk at the bar being like, ah, you see all that money Belichick spending? He's mad about Brady, right? I could see that guy. I could see that guy at Gillette Stadium. I could see that guy at Foxborough Stadium back in the day. Brady was the Patriots, not Belichick. Brady was the Patriots, not Belichick. Like, I can see that guy. And everybody's like, dude, shut up. Or at least it would be like, nah, man, you know, Belichick was the Patriots. Or, nah, man, they both were. They both were. But instead, now we got a bunch of people on the internet going, Belichick's spending a lot. Brady was the Patriots, right? That's what the internet is. So we got all these memes. So now what's the general opinion? What's the general perspective? What becomes the generally accepted truth is the shallow, emotionless perspective, the surface level perspective. It doesn't become, oh, everything I said about why we have so much cap space, why the Patriots have so much cap space. It becomes Belichick's mad. He needs to beat Brady. Brady was the Patriots, right? That's what it becomes. That's what it becomes. This goes all the way back to Deflategate. And again, that's the interesting thing to me. Was Deflategate done because the internet let them get away with it? Or was that a smear job that would have existed before the internet and the internet allowed us to be able to see behind it? I personally think that it made some of the things easier to see, such as, you know, I could read all the court documents and everything. But general reasoning would have shown that what the truth was. And I don't think it would have been a hit job where the emotionless surface level perspective got out there. But now it is, right? Now it exists that a lot of people think they cheated. They think they deflated the balls, right? A lot of people think that. It's the same thing here. This will be the general narrative about this offseason for the Patriots. You will see this if you watch draft coverage. If you watch NFL draft coverage in April, you will see people saying, oh, well, the Patriots spent a lot of money this year because they don't want to lose. And Belichick really wants to win. So he is uncharacteristically aggressive. Yeah, he is uncharacteristically aggressive because he has more money to spend and more cap space. And he has more leverage than everyone else in the league. And then one of the announcers will say something like, do you think it's because Brady won? Do you think maybe it's because Brady won? And that's how they used to do it back in the day, right? They used to just float those ideas. And then, you know, the dumb people would be like, yeah, I heard that. It's because Brady won. And the guy in the bar would pick that up. And then they would start yelling at people, right? That's how they used to do it. They used to seed the idea. And they'll still do that on ESPN, right? ESPN has some level of decorum left. But that's what'll happen. And that'll propagate the most on the internet. And that, to wrap it back to Zack Snyder's Justice League, is why I went on a Twitter sabbatical. Why I went on an internet sabbatical. Now, it's a problem because people are still sending me fucking reviews for the movie. They're still telling me, oh, these are what the headlines are saying. I don't want to know. The reason I don't want to know is based upon what people are saying about the movie, I can figure out what the movie is about and what the issues are. I don't want to watch a movie. Look, this is the worst thing for me in the entire fucking world. The worst thing for me, well, okay, I'm being over the top, but this is one of the worst things. One of the worst things is going into a movie, knowing what people are saying, or a show, knowing what people are saying, and having that voice in my head going, oh, well, okay, they're saying this. I have to be on the lookout for that and figure out if that's true or not. I don't want to go in there with that perspective. I don't want to go in there with that perspective. When I do reviews, I try and do it in a way that I'm not being the voice in your head. I want to do a review to let you know whether to go in there with an open heart and open mind or not. I want to know whether to let you be vulnerable to a movie or not. That is my goal. Saying, hey, this is a movie that if you're going to go in with this perspective because it's not worth being vulnerable. If you're being vulnerable, you're going to let yourself be harmed. Or I say, this is a movie that you can be vulnerable with. That's my entire goal. Because to me, the ideal form of watching a movie is to be vulnerable. It's like the ideal form of meeting a person. It would be awesome if every person you met, you could have an honest conversation with. And you could just be like, hey, this is what's going on. This is who I am. But some people you got to have your guard up against. Because it's like, yeah, that guy's a manipulative douchebag. That girl's a bitch. You just have to do that sometimes. It's the same thing with movies. And it's this with reviews, especially with reviews about stuff. Excuse me. About stuff that it's so culturally controversial. If you hear anything, you know what they're going to say. And with Zack Snyder's Justice League, I knew it was going to be a problem for me. It was going to be a problem because there was a virtual premiere on the 15th that a bunch of random fans got invited to. I get why they did that. I get why HBO Max did that. They were giving it to the people who they knew were going to talk a lot because they're hoping that the fans can drown out the what they know will be the negative press. Because at this point, you know Zack Snyder is going to get smeared in the press. I don't know what they're going to say about Army of the Dead. But when that comes out in May, that's going to get smeared too. And look, that's part of the problem here. I'm going to go in watching these movies, and I have to actively try not to be like, oh, well, that's what's going to upset people. But it's going to happen because my brain can do two things at once, and it fucking sucks sometimes. I'm going to be watching these movies and be like, yeah, that was awesome, but this is why someone would hate it, because I know there are going to be fucking haters out there. And I'm trying to drown them out of my head. I'm trying to get them out. Is it second-handed? I don't know if this is second-handed or not. That'd be something for a psychologist to talk about. This is almost a therapy session at this point, everyone. This is almost a therapy session. This is almost a therapy session because it's like, is this good? Is this bad? This is the way it is. Okay? And they did that. That was on Monday. Before that, they had given other people screeners, such as, you know, Dave the Film Junkie, and told them when they could lift their embargo. And then finally, there was the press embargo. So there were three waves of people getting these screeners and seeing the movie before me. So there's no way. Look, I'm not even on right now. I deleted the Twitter app from my phone. I don't know what the fuck's being said, but I know there's huge conversations out there. And I know that when I go back into it, that it's going to be a whole ecosystem that's developed without me involved. That I'm going to be behind the times. Now, to a certain extent, I don't know if I want to go back into it. This may be me getting out. And that's why I think I'm more excited about Army of the Dead. Because I can actually contribute to that conversation. I sort of think the conversations around Zack Snyder's Justice League, around his DC movies, are sort of, the die has been cast. The conversation's always going to be that, oh, it was Brady more than Belichick. Oh, Belichick is mad about Brady. Right? And I feel like that voice is becoming more and more like a witch in Hansel and Gretel, like trying to lure you into the oven. But I feel like that's what the conversation is going to be from now on. They deflated the footballs, right? Snyder doesn't understand Superman, right? That's what it's going to be from now on. It's just then people defending against that. Well, here's how he actually understands Superman. It's not enjoyable. So I didn't want any of that to influence me. So I took a break from that. And I'm just getting ready. So to sort of sum all this up, I got some people coming. Daniel's coming. Midsider Michael's coming. They're both flying in. Elliot, of course, if you guys remember, if you've been around for a while, Elliot lives around here, so he's going to be coming over. And the four of us are going to watch together on the 18th. You know, none of us got that special invite there. Is it special? I don't know. I don't care. Whatever. It's actually better this way, so I can watch it for the first time with my friends, because I don't know if I would have watched the red carpet premiere. And it sort of would have ruined the plans that I already had set out. So it worked out. Everything worked out. And we're going to watch it. And then we'll do a review. We will do a review. I don't know if we'll do a special episode. It might be Patreon only. We'll see, but it'll be interesting. I think I'll get the gang back together from who did the original Justice League review. I know Trailer Takedown Dan was on there. I know William was. I don't know if anyone else was. I'm going to have to go back and look at that episode. But I think we'll get the original gang back together and sort of talk about our takes from back then, talk about our opinion from back then around the theatrical cut. I know that I said it's not a Zack Snyder's movie. I think I was too forgiving of it. Too forgiving of it, because I wanted to see elements of Zack Snyder in there. But, you know, I said it wasn't a Zack Snyder movie. So, we'll see. Looking forward to that. I hope you guys all watch that. You know, after the 18th, please, everyone talk to me. I'm willing to talk to anyone and everything about it. Probably do another Bible study episode on the Zack Snyder Bible. Probably do another episode of that. That series will not just be DC. It's going to obviously be Army of the Dead as that starts getting there. You know, in April, we'll start shifting to some Army of the Dead content. And May, definitely we'll do, you know, an analysis of Army of the Dead. As far as other movies to sort of close out this episode, to let you know whether to be vulnerable or not, to go in with an open heart and open mind, I saw Raya and the Last Dragon with Christine. Christine really wanted to see it. It looked good to me. It looked interesting to me. You know, I'll see most Disney movies, right? I've even seen Frozen and Frozen 2, those terrible, terrible social justice movies. So I'll see, you know, anything. Like you guys know, I have the AMC pass. I try to go as often as I can. I love going to the movies. So, you know, Christine's excited to see a movie like that. I'll see it. Unless there's something that I think looks terrible. Like, I told her Booksmart looked terrible. It was terrible. I don't know why she didn't listen to me. She agreed with me. It was one of the worst movies she's ever seen. So, Raya and the Last Dragon. I will tell you wholeheartedly, you can be vulnerable with this movie. This is just a good, enjoyable movie. It's pretty close to classic Disney. When I say classic, I mean, you know, the golden era of the 90s. It's got a good lead character. It's got a good story. I think fans of Avatar: The Last Airbender will find the story kind of similar. It very much reminded me of Avatar: The Last Airbender, and I don't want to go into too many spoilers here, but, you know, it went into, oh, go to all these different lands and meet all these different people, and that's what influences the outcome of the journey. Very much video game-esque in that, you know, you go to these different worlds and complete these different missions. That's what I didn't like about Avatar: The Last Airbender. And I think with a story like that in this movie, it shows maybe it would work a little bit better if you had the longer form storytelling. And maybe it does work for Avatar: The Last Airbender. Maybe with Avatar: The Last Airbender, they could have pulled the overall thread through a little bit more. Because what I liked about this movie was the overall thread was still apparent. It made it obvious to me where it was going. You know, maybe it would have been good to spend a little bit more time with each character. But like I said, that's an interesting discussion about, you know, long form versus short term storytelling. I would say, you know, this is sort of like a mix between Avatar: The Last Airbender, Aladdin, and The Lion King. And you can see elements of each. Like, there's the Aladdin scene. There's the Lion King scene, right? I won't spoil the Lion King scene. I will spoil the Aladdin scene, because of the premise of the movie. So the premise of the movie is there's this land that was filled with dragons, and the word I think is Kumanja. That sounds correct to me. Maybe it's wrong. They lived in Kumanja, which is basically like world peace, where it's like this river valley, and they all have different areas where they live around the different civilizations, the different tribes live in Kumanja because they live together, and the dragons are keeping the peace. But then these evil spirits come and they start, you know, killing people. And as the dragons die, they can't protect the people anymore. And Kumanja ends. But then what happens is these five dragons get together and they're able to defeat the evil spirits and protect the people. And there's the dragon energy ball that's left behind by the dragons that defeated the evil spirits. But the tribes are fighting over that, and that's the reason Kumanji is gone. Because they all want the dragon energy because they believe that's what leads to a prosperous society. Right? As if it's this finite thing. And that plays into it. Right? That's what I mean. You can be vulnerable with this. There's the premise could go collectivist. It could go, you know, Marxist. But it doesn't, which is good. So what happens is at the beginning of the movie, the tribes go to the one tribe that has the dragon energy ball and is trying to make them go to Kumanji again, and they all fight, and the dragon energy ball gets split into pieces. It gets split into pieces, and not only do we have non-Kumanji now, but we have like a post-apocalyptic wasteland, like 9 years later. So, you know, Raya is this little girl when that happens, and she becomes a teenager, and then we have like a Mad Max post-apocalyptic world where she's trying to find the last dragon. She's trying to find Sisu, the last dragon. Because she thinks, if I find Sisu, I can make the world Kumanji again. So, that's the Aladdin scene. She finds Sisu. She finds Sisu, and Sisu appears, and she's all sort of discombobulated. Disconcerted, because she doesn't know what's going on, because she's a dragon. And she thinks that the last thing she remembers was... beating the evil creatures. I don't remember what they're called. They're like giant purple dust clouds that, like, turn everything and everyone to stone. The dust cloud turned Sisu's four siblings to stone, so Sisu's the only one left. And when she comes back, it's loud, it's big, she's over the top, and she's voiced by comedian Awkwafina. So I'm like, yo, this is like when Aladdin rubbed the lamp and Robin Williams came out. And that opening scene was very, very funny. It was very funny. I was like, wow, Awkwafina having a big role here. Right, because you know Disney always likes to have like the one huge actress, one huge actor, one huge name in each of their movies. At least that's the way it used to be. There were a few names in this. I was like, oh, wait, that's Daniel Day Kim. They sort of did the Crazy Rich Asians thing where they were like, hey, let's have all the Asian actors in this movie. So yeah, Awkwafina came out. I was like, oh, cool. She wasn't as funny throughout the movie. They more played with her awkwardness because they made Sisu very awkward. So, you know, very intentional on their part. But overall, this is a good movie. This is, you know, I will not be upset. I will not be annoyed seeing Raya and the Last Dragon in the Disney parks. I will not be annoyed with the marketing material going forward. I will not be annoyed with all of that. I mean, whenever I see Frozen, even though the ride in Epcot is very good for Frozen, it's sort of overall very annoying to know how loved and revered it is and pushed it is. You know, Olaf himself, the little snowman guy, he's kind of like inconsequential, but seeing all of it, like, and knowing it has this anti-male perspective is kind of tough to swallow. With Rise of the Last Dragon, it'll give him, you know, like I said, classic Disney, where like you go and you're like, yeah, there's some goodness here. There's some benevolence here. It was an enjoyable experience. So, you know, go ahead and see it. You got some kids, bring them to see Raya and the Last Dragon. I think you'd enjoy it. And, you know, don't be afraid as an adult to go and see it. I think you'd enjoy it if you just want to have a good time. Is it the best Disney movie ever? No. Is it enjoyable? Yeah. All right, that's going to be the end of the episode for this week. Thank you for listening to my insane ramblings in this solo episode. Appreciate it. Your support makes this show happening. Keeps this show happening. My bad. As I always say, you know, this would just be me talking into the microphone. Very much this episode would just be me screaming into the corner of my closet, if not for you listening. Likewise, appreciate our Liberty.me listeners, libertarians. I don't know how much this is going to appeal to you because it wasn't really about role of government. Although, as we always say, as Daniel used to say, politics are downstream from culture. Culture, as I said, is downstream from the individual. So to me, this all affects it. You have to believe these things. Well, not exactly what I'm saying, but you have to think about these things and you have to have beliefs about these things in order to end up where you end up politically. So I hope it was valuable to you that way. If you want to support us, support the show. You can do so through Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. TheMidSide.com/Patreon. TheMidSide.com/Locals. You can buy my book, The Cut. If you're watching Zack Snyder's Justice League, that book may be very interesting to you. This is a good week to pick it up. Read it next week. Watch the movie. Read the book. Read the book. Watch the movie. Find it interesting that way. And the most important way, the best way you can help improve the show is help grow the help grow the show is to tell a friend. Tell a friend about the show. Tell them how much you enjoyed it. Tell them how interesting or insane this solo episode was. This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin Emelinski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce. ¥10,000 can give you such a crick in the neck. That was my terrible reference to Aladdin.